Mom!
What do you want her for? She can't help you?
Nobody can. You scared, ain't you? You should be. Christmas Eve is the scariest damn night of the year.
I'd be scared too, if I was you.
You know what happens Christmas Eve, don't you? You know all about Santa Claus.
He brings presents to all good boys and girls.
Your daddy told you that, didn't he? Well, I tell you something. Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. Naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. What about you, boy? You've been good all year? You see Santa Claus tonight? You better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Time to go home, Billy.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
Oh, you sang my name for me. How nice of you. And it's still the Christmas spirit.
And Trish Cocklin, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
And Jeff Omega.
Naughty. Punish.
No, those porns, we're not talking about those today.
Wait.
Hello, everybody.
We're not?
No, it's the other one. It's not that podcast. That was the special one that we were doing for money.
Oh, okay. That could be found on our OnlyFans.
Yep.
But today, we'll talk about Silent Night, Deadly Night from 1984, and it's kind of remake in 2012. Oh, I'd like to maybe call it more of a reboot. It is its own animal, but it does take its broad strokes from the original, and the original wound up spawning, and correct me if I'm wrong, 4 more sequels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Many of which, you know, I didn't know existed until Jeff told me.
They are all worth watching on some level or another,
and all on Tubi.
And you know what? Let's start out by addressing the biggest controversy that I noticed in this movie. The lipstick on that kid. Oh my God.
Hey, some kids just have very red lips when they're young.
Billy at 5? Wow. Yeah. Really did the makeup up. He overdid it. He kind of looked tardy. That was the controversy of the movie, right? There wasn't another one.
You know what? I was reading that the film producers, they were bracing themselves for a controversy regarding their depiction of the Catholic orphanage, and that wasn't even it.
No, the Catholics were fine with it. And they even deliberately tried to egg that on by opening it up in Catholic regions heavily to get some of that controversy going.
And
But apparently some moms with nothing better to do really had a problem with an axe-wielding Santa Claus, despite the fact that there were 2 movies that preceded this that kind of just came and went, and nobody batted an eye at the evil killer Santa Clauses.
Yeah, they were the first Karens.
Well, it was, and that was the Tales from the Crypt movie. Memory serves. There was a segment in there, and Better Watch Out from 1980 with Killer Santa Clauses, and nobody had a problem with those ones. But in 84, people were really touchy.
And where this is in the heyday of, you know, anti-heavy metal, anti-Dungeons and Dragons, anti-television, literally everything was out to corrupt the young children's minds in the mid-80s.
Yep, Reaganomics.
Yeah, and it got a lot of press. This movie actually was outpacing Nightmare on Elm Street. They opened the same week, and it was actually doing better in the theaters at the time. But the controversy kicked up within a couple of weeks and really killed the theatrical. The studio kind of caved and pulled it out of the theaters, unfortunately, and it took a long time before a re-release elsewhere. And it was called all sorts of nasty things. Like, I mean, it is a very mean-spirited movie. Surprisingly, it's actually got layers. It's got more layers than the remake does.
Ooh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Remake's very mean-spirited.
Yeah, the original actually kind of paints you exactly what happened to Billy that kind of caused this sort of psychotic break, like a series of terrible events, a confusion with like sexuality. A lot of it really gets into how like the mental pathway to the pathology of why he behaved this way.
And it's pretty believable too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, to see the breaking of this kid's mind, like it's Christmas, they're going to visit grandpa at the home. He's very excited about Christmas, this little boy, and then grandpa wakes out of his catatonia while nobody's in the room to freak the kid out about Christmas being the most horrible time of the year. And you guys heard that clip at the opening of the show. And then they walk back in. He's back into the catatonia, which makes me wonder, was he faking?
Yeah.
It seems like it. It seems like he was like, I can't be bothered. Everybody's beneath me. I just ignore everybody. You know, I'm done. The world, I'm done. I'm ignoring everyone other than my grandson. To scare the shit out of him.
Yeah, gives him a big smile, and then you realize, like, oh, he's smiling because he wants to scare the crap out of this poor kid, who is now, like, really getting fearful. It's like, oh, no, I haven't been good all year. Santa Claus is going to punish me.
Well, this might be another reason why Grandpa was faking the catatonia. He's obviously an incredibly paranoid man. He might have some paranoid schizophrenia, or might have something that makes him so paranoid. So thinking that he's safe by pretending he's catatonic might be one of the reasons why he's doing that.
I think he had way more motivation than he deserves. This movie was
true.
A really great job of sort of talking about PTSD and the failure of a system for this child. But I don't know if Grandpa had any motivation other than to just creep out the fucking kid.
And I think maybe that's where the marketing failed this movie a bit. Like, even Siskel and Ebert just shat all over this movie, called out the distributors and the writers, and made sure all the public knew who their names were so they could shame them. I'm like,
yeah.
But it's when I see stuff like that, I'm like, man, how did you guys have such long careers?
I know.
I'm sitting there like, I don't think they watched the movie. That's what irritates me. If you hate it, tell me you hate it. But don't just pull that shit.
You know what? Ebert said that it was the second most reprehensible movie he had ever seen, next to I Spit on Your Grave.
Yes, he did. I would have actually clipped it, but the only audio I could find of the review of this movie, which was really short, I did find it on YouTube, but the audio quality was so terrible. So I just encourage our audience members to, our invaders, to go seek that out on their own and give it a close listen. If you can get through all of the poor VHS muddling, that the quality that I found, it was the only one I could find. But they really, really shat on this movie. But I think part of the problem was the marketing of this movie. They certainly marketed the evil killer Santa Claus, but those layers of the mental health issues, the poor child who's constantly failed from his youth growing up as an orphan in an orphanage, and being mistreated by the mother superior there, just firm hand. I don't think she meant ill, but it was the wrong hand to take with somebody who's gone through what he did at such a young age.
She was willfully ignorant.
Yes.
Absolutely. Because she instead of acknowledging that there's a problem when there's this behavior acting out at Christmas time, her response is punishment. So that's willful ignorance.
Yeah, that's just adding to his trauma.
And the other sister knew about it.
Yes.
Yeah, the other sister was telling her, this is the trauma. This is not the way to go about it. And all Mother Superior is like, well, I don't want to listen to what you have to say. Like, that's just garbage. And it's about the unregulated looking after these orphans. It's like, you're giving people who are probably shouldn't be around children sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. And it brings up the thing I hated most about this movie is where it ends. I cannot believe that they end it before she died. That was so frustrating. That's like jerking off and then getting interrupted.
And she doesn't get what's coming to her until the end of the second one.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, and that little, because I kept wondering when the parents were murdered, what happened to the kid in the car? And they never tell you. And then there's this kid at the end who's staring at this action. The kids have already seen one Santa shot down. It was the wrong one. And then Billy comes in to take care of mother. Yeah. And then we are assumed, like, I had to read up that was his little brother. I didn't know. I had no idea.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, he does mention Ricky earlier. He's saying, no, Ricky, I'm fine. Like, he does mention Ricky.
But they don't show him, so it's unclear as to who the child is. And I mean, it's great for setting up a sequel, but it's poorly handled.
The sequel is not a good movie by any means, but it's one of the great, entertaining, bad movies. But the sequel is entirely about his brother. The sequel is like, it opens up, he's in a mental institution being interviewed by a psychiatrist, and then he basically tells the first movie, edited down to 40 minutes, and then the rest of the movie, the next half an hour, is original stuff that they shot, and then there's 10 minutes of credits. So you could really just watch the half hour, the first 5-10 minutes, and then the half hour that's after the movie. And then that's kind of the sequel.
Yay. Isn't he in the third one as well?
Yeah, the character of his brother is also in the third one, played by a very young Bill Moseley. And he dies at the end of the second one, quote unquote. But they are able to save him and reconstruct his brain. So Bill Moseley is like a dude where the top part of his head is a tank that you can see through, and you can see his brain through this tank.
That's kind of awesome.
It's so awesome.
And then they put a metal plate in there, and he joined the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family.
Like, the third movie is so bonkers. It's like the brother from the second one, who has a brain in a jar in his head, is battling a psychic girl who's doing psychic experiments to try to see the trauma that happened to him that caused him to be a killer. And then it's like Carrie versus a serial killer who has his brain in a jar. And there's a scene where he goes up to someone's house and he has a toque over his brain jar cap. It's so crazy.
Wow. Well, it's actually like Professor X trying to figure out what happened to Wolverine.
Yeah, but straight to video with Bill Moseley, and it's a Christmas movie.
Nice.
Wild. Mickey Rooney's in number 5. Who publicly trashed the original film.
Yeah.
So, which I found very interesting, but I'm wondering, like, isn't that one subtitled The Toymaker? I'm wondering if he shot a movie thinking that it's called The Toymaker, and then they stuck Silent Night, Deadly Night 5 in front of it. He had no idea he was actually making it.
Yeah, that's very probably the case. It's kind of implied in the fourth one that, so Ricky's brother, who's Bill Moseley in the third one, it's implied that he's Clint Howard in the fourth one. And then Clint Howard is in the fifth one for like a scene. So I think that they just shot a scene with Clint Howard to tie it into the previous movie and then just called it Silent Night, Deadly Night 5. But
yeah, because from what I understand, they get increasingly disconnected from the original film.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fifth one is awesome. It's like killer Toy Story, but it's not really related to the first one at all, which is like a psychological horror movie.
Well, not entirely psychological. It's pretty violent too, but
yeah, like a psychological slasher. It's a slasher with some pop psychology added onto it.
And I think that's probably the biggest issue with the film is that it does have a bit of an identity crisis. And the weakness of the acting really does diminish the film for me a little bit. Because the right up until Billy's an adult, the acting is actually pretty solid. But then as soon as they start getting him a job in a toy store, let's point that out.
Right.
At Christmas.
He's traumatized by Christmas and gets him a job in a toy store. Not very smart.
Well, the sister does say, we've asked everybody else in town. I think that's what they tried to use to justify it, in that they couldn't get him a job anywhere else.
Like, he seemed fine until it was Christmas time.
Did she try the modeling agency? This big strapping handsome young man that starred in soap operas.
Right?
Like, yeah. Seems like a no-brainer. Just don't put him on the Christmas episode.
Like, one thing I love about Silent Night, Deadly Night is the beginning of the movie. In a weirdly entertaining way, you're watching a child get traumatized in real time, and then the rest of the movie is this ticking time bomb where you know he's going to snap at some point, and it's just a character being put into situations that you know are bad for his mental health. Can we contrive a way to make this kid traumatized by Christmas to be in a situation where he has to fill in for a Santa Claus and then get liquored up and then be told by people that he needs to do what Santa does?
And you know, they did a really good job of creating that sort of tension there, like, when's it going to happen? Mm-hmm. You know it's going to happen, but they did a good job of sort of building up to that between, like, the orphanage and when it actually happens, because they set up all these scenarios and you're like, okay, it's going to happen, but when and how? And then when it does, it's actually a little anticlimactic, to be honest, but
well, you know it's coming, and I mean, maybe it might have been shocking in 84, but we've seen our good share of slashers, so yeah, we're just waiting for it to happen at this point. But that's also awareness. We know what this movie is.
Yes.
So no real surprises.
Like, this movie really gets derided, I think, even today, for being a lot more like a run-of-the-mill slasher. And a lot of people say things like, oh, you know, like, it's all right. It's kind of generic for slashers of the time. But I would say that there is quite a lot in this movie that sets it apart from other slashers of the era.
Oh, I totally agree with you. They actually develop your killer.
Yes.
Right? He has motivation. You understand why he does what he does. You don't agree with it, but you also have some empathy for him until he starts murdering people.
Yeah. Because
he is traumatized and you're like, this poor guy. I understand where he's coming from because I've seen it all. So you understand the break a little bit better as well, because it's like, well, yeah, you keep pushing this kid in the wrong direction and all he knows is violence, and he's been told that Christmas is about punishment, and what's he going to do?
Yep.
And there's that great moment where he threatens that little girl who's on his lap. And I love how they tied that into the quote unquote remake, the reboot thing with the Donald Logue Santa Claus, where he's unduly honest with these children who are still in the lap.
That's pretty close of how my notes read, actually. Brutally honest and unrepentingly so.
Yes. And I love that. I think that's great. I think it established his character in the remake really well. I want to learn his rant when he's in the prison cell, because it is fucking brilliant and so well delivered.
Yeah, and you can hear it at the end of this episode. But you'll have to wait, because right now we're going to run the trailer for the original Silent Night, Deadly Night from 1984.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
That was the trailer for Silent Night, Deadly Night from 1984, with a story. Well, the story credit was given just because to Paul Kamey. He kind of came up with it, this one-line pitch in film school, and then the producers decided to give him a story credit for this, for that one sentence. So that's the story that Paul Kamey had. Written by Michael Hickey and directed by Charles E. Sellier Jr., whose career this might be his career height, but, you know, he did The Annihilators, which I think I saw when I was a kid. But, I mean, everybody remembers the classic snowballing. Nobody?
Snowballing?
Is it? No. Didn't they reference that in Clerks?
That's what I was wondering.
Very possibly. I'm pretty sure there's a porn called that.
Yep.
This movie stars Lillian Chavin as Mother Superior. She was actually in Predator 2. Gilmer McCormick as Sister Margaret, and she was in The Slaughterhouse-5. Tony Nero was Pamela, who was in a movie called Commando Squad. I just like the title. Robert Brian Wilson, who was Billy at age 18. He was primarily the adult killer Billy, and he was mainly a soap opera star. His biggest longevity was on Generations in Santa Barbara. Britt Leach was Mr. Sims, and actually he was in a couple episodes we've covered on the show. First time was in episode 48,
The Last Starfighter.
Yes.
And then again in episode 83,
Weird Science.
And there weren't a whole lot of stars in this movie, so we'll take them where we can get them.
Connections. Yes. A surprising number of connections.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Britt Leach is that guy. You see him in this movie, you're like, oh, that guy. Because he's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I actually thought he played the killer Santa Claus in the remake as well, the older guy that they meet in the bar for a second there, because they look so similar. But I'm like, oh, no way, he'd be like 90 years old now. Mm-hmm. So obviously it wasn't him, but for a second there I thought maybe that was their throwback to the original.
Maybe Nancy Borgenknecht, maybe Borgenknecht, Borgenknecht, sure, one of those. She was Mrs. Randolph, and she was in Neon City. H.E.D. Redford was Captain Richards. He was in Footloose. Danny Wagner was Billy at age eight. Linnea Quigley is in here as Denise, getting the best kill of the entire movie. We actually talk about Linnea back in recently in episode 261.
Neon.
No. Night of the Demons.
Night of the Demons.
Both of them. Both of them.
Yes, she was.
Linnea Quigley is probably the biggest name in this movie, which is crazy.
She gets the antler kill, which is recycled in the remake. Leo Getter was Tommy, and he was in episode 176.
Near Dark.
But let's not forget about 152.
No Way Out.
There you go. You thought I was going to miss it.
You know what? You set me up. You totally set me up. It was awesome.
Randy Stumpf was Andy. He was in a movie called Are You in the House Alone?
Ooh.
That's a good title.
I know. That's why I wanted to read it. Will Hare was Grandpa, and Jesus Christ, Seb and I talked about him in episode 191.
Enter the Ninja. I was really pleased to find that connection, actually.
Me too. Like, Ninja, man, right on.
If you see a ninja, you better run for your life, boy.
We need to do another ninja movie.
That's the point of ninjas. Ninjas are like cougars. Once you see them, you're already dead.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. This is 2020. Everybody's wearing a mask. Everybody looks like a ninja now.
Yeah, exactly. They're harder to find now.
Yeah. Tara Buckman is Mother Ellie, and she was in Cannonball Run and, of course, Snowballing. Jeff Hansen was the father. His name was Jim, and he was in Don't Look Under the Bed. And Charles Durkop was the killer Santa at the beginning of the movie, and he was in The Sting.
Yes. Ooh. I knew. I was actually really surprised to see him at the beginning of the movie. And I'm like, that guy's been in a lot of stuff. I'm surprised he's in this kind of semi-low budget horror film, but then this is kind of mid-career for him, and he's always sort of one of those fill-in actors. Mm-hmm. He's always one of the that guy, that person in that thing.
That one time.
That one time, yes.
FYI, wearing that shirt right now.
Oh. There you go. You can get it at our T Public store.
Yep.
And it is a store now. It's not just our shop. It is a store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff there. Okay. Well, let's get back into Silent Night, Deadly Night. You know, I can't remember if I'd seen this movie before. Some of the kills I remembered, some of them I didn't. Maybe just because I saw stuff in a horror documentary about it. Some good kills, though. I mean, I really like the sledding one. Chopping the head off, and of course the antler kill was also a classic.
The sledding one was hilarious. I laughed out loud when I saw the body coming down. I'm like, oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was so good. And I love the idea that there's these 18-year-old bullies who, so there's these two friends who are going out sledding on Christmas Eve, as you do. And then there's two bullies who go out to the sled hill just to steal their sleds so they can have a blast sledding. The setup is very strange, but they get what's coming to them.
It's the Halloween douche move.
Yep.
This movie at least is a little more subtle in the sins that are committed at Christmas that he targets. Whereas, good God, the remake, everybody in that town's a shitheel.
Yeah.
And it's not
even
fun.
The people that aren't.
Yeah. Like, it's not fun to watch. It's just
no, it's not
mean.
Yeah. You know, especially that teenager right at the beginning of the movie, she like slaps her mom's pills out of her hand and she's like, what'd you do that for? That's mommy's heart pills. She's like,
I almost turned it off. I'm you know what? I'm going to have to talk about this without watching it because that was just so aggravating.
She's like, take me to the fucking mall. I thought we would go to church tonight. Yeah. Fuck church. You're going to get me to the mall so I can get my new JVC.
That kid was so terrible. And it was like, you know, this is one time I'm really okay with them killing a kid.
Yeah.
But that's
the
problem. They make them too awful that you don't feel bad about them getting killed at all, which maybe is the point. But I think a more well-rounded approach would have been to say, hey, you know, maybe they weren't good all year, but they're acknowledging that and trying to be better or whatever. Not everybody's going to be like that, but to have at least some semblance. And then you actually feel bad about a character dying if that's the case.
Yeah. And
it doesn't take you on a journey. You just wait and you're just watching kill after kill after kill.
Yeah. Yeah. The only person I had any empathy for was actually the girl who got pushed into the wood chipper because because it demonized sex work for one. And two, they didn't establish that she was a bad person. She just happened to be exposing her body for money. Again, demonizing sex work again. But
yeah,
I felt some empathy for her. Maybe because she had nice boobs. but she was the one who
that's
didn't
putting the naughty like, into naughty.
Yeah.
If, to me, not. I was sitting there going, that underwear is really cute and I want a pair.
Yeah, I think that honestly, out of the remake, that whole sequence was probably the high point of the movie. I think that's where you felt the most tension of somebody running away from the killer Santa and like the kill was pretty brutal. And that the rest of the movie doesn't really get quite to that point. It's just a lot of shitty
people.
The gore
is good when it happens. That might be the only good thing about it, to be honest, is the gore is good. The boobs are good. Everything you want out of a shitty horror movie.
You know what I kept thinking when I was watching this movie was I'm like, oh, I bet you $100 that those Karens in the '80s thought this was the type of movie they were protesting against. It's like they'd listen to any interview with these women in 1980s, like, okay, well, we'll just make that movie. Cause it's mean. It's not good. It's just some random Santa doing random shit.
Yeah. They threw the most interesting part of the original film away. It's just stuffed into the background and you get like 30 seconds of it at the end that it was some traumatized child that grew up following in his dad's footsteps and thinking this is what Santa does. And he travels town to town.
Yeah.
He became an urban legend.
That's the twist of the remake.
Yeah.
I think burying the lead on that one, I think made it way less effective.
Oh yeah.
Which again, I don't get is because the whole point, this is what Santa does. He punishes people. He sees Santa burnt alive. Then he gets burned. And FYI, if he was burnt like that, he'd be dead. I mean, that much skin damage would kill him. But like, does he stop now? Because that's how the other Santa was stopped?
No, Christmas was over.
Well, see, that's just dumb. Then it has, to me, that is no motivation at all because he's not fulfilling any psychological need.
No, the way he drives off at the end of the movie, it's like, well, Christmas is over. We'll see you next year. No, we won't. That movie sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen worse 2000s slasher movies or early 2010 slasher movies. But one thing that does leave a little bit of a strange taste in my mouth from the remake is there are a bunch of aspects of it that are kind of based on like a real life massacre that happened in 2008.
Yep.
And
I read about
there was
this
a lot of killer Santa Clauses. You know, people dressed up as Santa kill other people. It happens. But in 2008, there was a guy who like had a homemade flamethrower and then he like shot a bunch of people with a gun and then like burned down the house and all this stuff. So all the imagery with the flamethrower was based on like a murder that happened only 4 years before the movie came out.
That was his ex-wife. The first shot hit like his 8-year-old niece who was running to greet him.
Yeah, because he opens the door just as Santa. His 8-year-old niece is like, Santa, and shoots her in the face.
And so he shoots survived, her in the face. But, yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
Like, the guy is a psychopath. And then they didn't manage to apprehend him. He killed himself before they could get him.
So it's a little crazy that they based a movie off of that so recently after, you know, a tragedy.
Well, there was another one in 2011.
Do you think that they were trying to go for the same controversy the first one had by doing that?
Yes.
Yeah, could be.
Except the thing only opened in 11 theaters. Like, it didn't even get a wide release.
It made less than 10 grand its opening weekend.
Yeah, it cost 5 million.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, it only made, the remake only made $130,000.
Oh, boy.
Good.
Yeah, that's the world.
Crazy, actually.
That's a worldwide gross. The U.S. gross was 14 grand. I mean, 11 theaters. It means it was a small run and it was always destined to go direct to video.
Well, it was
released by Anchor Bay.
A Starz company. So, yeah, it was always intended for like streaming or direct to video or something like that. But they obviously wanted a theatrical release. So, for whatever reason, just to see how it would do, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, the original, for its short window that it was open before they pulled it from theaters, the movie cost just a little over $1 million and made 2.5 just in its short run. So it was profitable even in that time.
One thing I was reading is that Columbia TriStar was actually in part owned by the Coca-Cola Corporation. And that's part of the reason why the movie was pulled, is because they didn't want it to negatively impact their Coke sales.
Yeah, because Santa Claus being so closely associated with the product, at least the modern version of it. I don't know if there's truth into that, but it's certainly interesting to think about. And given that what that movie made just in its short run, projections, they projected it would have probably, if it would have had a proper theatrical, would have raked in about $20-25 million. That's what Warner was estimating.
And it's a shame, too, because I think that it, had it stayed in theaters, it would be a slasher that we would maybe be talking about a lot more, similar to other bigger slashers of the time. But I feel like this movie really gets forgotten about because of the controversy and how short of a run it had in theaters, despite it having a lot of sequels.
Well, with it outpacing A Nightmare on Elm Street, it does make you wonder, like, would Freddy be as widely regarded if this movie had kept its run? But all those horror fans got kind of shoved over to the other movie because this got closed down.
Yeah.
Very true. Billy versus Freddy, would that have been the true crossover?
Oh my goodness. You know, the sequel, so this guy Eric Freeman plays Ricky's brother in the sequel. He has the most crazy line delivery out of any actor that you'll ever see. And every time he talks, he raises his eyebrows with every word. There's lines like, he's talking to the psychiatrist, and he's like, I've never told anyone this before. Here it comes. And yeah, maybe like that movie, I think, kind of derailed the prestige of the first one even more. You're very right. Like, if it had been big, maybe there could have been a big sequel. Maybe all of the direct-to-video sequels wouldn't have been direct-to-video. Maybe it would be more like a Texas Chainsaw type franchise than, you know, lots of other ones that are just regulated to direct-to-video sequels.
Well, they really had budgets and better writers, clearly, to come up with those sequels, for sure. If it had gotten the acknowledgement it deserved. All in all, the mediocre acting aside, it's one of the more intelligent horror films of that era.
Yeah,
and I compared to the remake, I'm like, I don't think this is even that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you have really good talent, or some good talent anyway, in the remake, and they're just phoning it in.
Yeah.
So that's honestly a bigger sin. I can actually forgive actors who are raw and untested and just aren't very experienced, but I don't know if I can forgive it the other way when you have veterans who are doing terrible jobs.
Well, to be fair, some of the dialogue they had to deliver was brutal. I'm sorry, but Malcolm McDowell's dialogue was fucking awful.
Oh my God. He thought he was some sort of action guy out of the 80s. Like, it was
double
terrible.
Ass, double screwed. That's the dumbest thing.
Oh, it was excruciating. It was so hard to watch whenever he was on screen. And it would.
What do you think this is? Glee?
Yeah, it was absolutely heartbreaking to see an actor of that stature having to deliver that garbage.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, it just made me realize that, man, how hard did Malcolm McDowell fall during that time to do that piece of trash?
Well, I keep looking at it. I kept watching it, and I'm pretty sure they're like, okay, so we got to put in this kill and this kill and this kill and this kill. So now we have our reboot of Silent Night, Deadly Night. Dude, we need dialogue. Ah, oh, shit. Let's just figure something out. Let's do this cocaine and see if it's great.
Yeah.
And the only dialogue that was well written was the stuff that Don Olo got to deliver.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, like, watching movies like that, it always makes me wonder, because when you're on the set, depending on the director, and I'm assuming that this director and writer weren't super anal retentive about their material, there's a lot of times where actors will try to rework what they're given and then try to do it in the way that they think is going to be best. And I feel like what we're seeing is Malcolm McDowell is delivering the lines that are on the script, being a much more classical actor, and Daniel Logue possibly doing a lot of rewriting of a lot of his own material for his character.
And that's possible, because, I mean, he is also a screenwriter. He did write Tao of Steve, or co-wrote Tao of Steve, which is another really well-written film in terms of dialogue. So it's possible that, he was improvising a lot of that just to give his character some depth or some meaning in this throwaway film.
His character was definitely one of the more entertaining elements of the remake. I kind of wish that he was in it a little more.
Yeah, but he's pretty pointless, though, as well. But you've got a couple of different Santas in here as misdirection as the investigation is going on. You've got Jamie King here playing the...
She's a deputy.
Yeah, she's been called in. She wasn't even going to work Christmas because apparently she's got a tragedy in her own past where she lost her husband at Christmas time. And then we never explore that.
Don't know much at all.
Never dive back into that. That would have been interesting. That was far more interesting than anything else that was going on. And I kept waiting for it. Never happened. No, well, and this town has got more Santas than citizens, I think.
Well, because there's a Santa contest. But the other thing that they do with her character, and it's also thrown away, is at one point she calls her dad and says, I don't think I'm cut out for this. So like, she's like a new deputy because her husband passed away and she's only been on the job for a year. They never really explain that she's in this role and like how long she's been in the role.
Yeah, and her father was a retired officer as well. Yeah. And Malcolm McDowell's got no faith in her whatsoever.
None. And in fact, he's a bit of a misogynist prick about it all.
Yeah.
He is pretty big dick about it.
No, like what character isn't a prick except for Jamie King, who's just kind of doe-eyed. Oh, that's true. The dad. Which made me wonder why he was targeted. Was he the cop at the initial?
Yes.
Yeah, because they made a point of focusing on the name tag at the beginning of the movie when she puts her shirt on, and at the end when he shoots her dad or his.
So that was a revenge from the Santa Claus, the kid.
Yeah. But why did it take him so long to get there?
I know.
He's killing dad for like at least 5 years before, and now he's just getting to the town where his parents died.
That's really slow driving.
That's my question. And then that's the other thing where it talks about like the psychological, he's fulfilled that goal. Why the fuck do you keep going?
This guy looked like he was in his 50s.
Yeah. The guys, it's such a mess. Oh, but there was one part where I thought we were going to get a really cool twist where the killer comes in and Donald Logue is in the cell and he's like, what took you so long? Like, he's really mad. Let me out of here. And the guy lets him out. And I thought for some reason there was going to be like, oh, there's a double Santa, like a Scream thing where it's double Santas who are working together.
Well, they kind of were doing that a little bit because there's the other Santa who is also a killer.
Yeah.
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 But I think we having that doing what Trish was thinking was happening would have elevated the movie exponentially.
Yeah.
Because it would have been a really well done misdirect.
Yeah. Well, let's
especially
get into
because they're all wearing the mask to obscure their face as well.
Well, let's run the trailer for Silent Night 2012 and get into this cast as well.
Silent Night, Holy Night, Holy Sky.
Got something for me?
Let me tell you about Christmas. It ain't all candy canes and pretty lights. I heard this story. This fella dressed as Santa. He set about killing them that was naughty.
Creep.
Every year, a new town.
Everyone knows that story. It's an urban legend.
It ain't.
Christmas. The number one holiday for people going nuts.
Listen, we've got a lead on our killer from the motel.
He's wearing a Santa suit and a mask.
Hiding in plain sight.
What if he was punishing them?
We're just gonna have to take this maniac down ourselves.
Christmas Eve is the scariest damn night of the year.
That was the trailer for Silent Night from 2012 with a screenplay by Jason Rothwell, who wrote Polar for Netflix, which was okay. Directed by Stephen C. Miller. Oh, that's Stephen Miller. That's not a good start. He directed amazing action movies like Scream of the Banshee, Escape Plan 2, Hades, and Bruce Willis's most famous movies, Extraction, First Kill, and Marauders.
Those are Christmas classics.
Fuck. Oh, yeah. I've never heard of any of those.
No.
Bruce, what happened? Sam and I were on a podcast, and it's no wonder I didn't know any of the Bruce Willis movies. I know Die Hard, Die Hard 2, and Die Hard 3.
I know Hudson Hawk.
That's about it.
Ooh, Blind Date with Kim Basinger.
There you go.
Red was kind of popular.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Occasionally gets into... I think he gets a good movie out of every 10 bad ones.
Yeah, I would say that the really, really good movies that Bruce Willis does, this is not a slight to Bruce Willis. He's like Nicolas Cage, where he'll just take literally any role that's thrown at him.
Yeah.
He's probably he's going to be one of those 500 credits, fuck this guys. Yeah. Maybe 10% generously of those will be ones that are worth watching.
Yeah.
Well, he is notorious for signing on to like one scene and then so they can put him in the credits. Like I call it a Bruce Willis film, even though he's hardly in it for like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, and then I mean that gets a film distribution, right?
Yep.
That's probably what all those were. This movie stars Malcolm McDowell as Sheriff Cooper. We've talked about him a couple of times. First time was in episode 59.
Halloween.
And again in 137.
Missed that one.
That was Cat People.
Oh, for fuck's sake, I can't even miss that.
Yeah. Jamie King is Aubrey. And I'd forgotten we talked about her a couple of times, actually, which I'm kind of surprised we had. But the first time was in episode 74.
Bloody Valentine?
That's the one. And then 87.
Was Mother's Day.
That's right. Fairly close together. Donald Logue was Santa Jim. And we actually did talk about him in episode 117.
One of the best movies ever.
Reindeer Games.
Oh, terrible. But, you know, he was also in Gotham for multiple seasons, so you know he was Harvey Bullock, and a very good Harvey Bullock in a weird series.
Yeah,
yes.
That was he's one of those actors who should be much bigger than he is, because he's always really good in everything he does, no matter how bad the rest of the movie is.
He does stand out in the especially in movies like this. He stands out and shines among the shit.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's better for an actor to be the high point of a lot of shitty things, or would it be better if he was just in better things?
I don't know, but if you're in a bunch of shitty things that don't do well, but it doesn't seem to harm your career, then you're probably doing okay, regardless of your choices. If nobody's blaming you, then you're probably golden. Rick Skeen was Ronald Jones Jr. He was in Wishmaster 3. Was that the blonde teen kid that was boffing the mayor's daughter?
No, that's Eric Berg.
Okay. I couldn't tell half of the people apart. They got names, and then I never heard them during the movie.
Yep.
Ellen Wong was Brenda, the secretary at the police station. She was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and I recently talked about her in part one of 31 Days of Horror when I talked about The Void.
Oh.
Yes, and she's a regular on Glow as well, which has unfortunately now been canceled. But
yeah, please give us a movie or something to wrap that up. Andrew Kikon was Deputy Giles. And he was in The Exorcism of Molly Hartley. Courtney Jane White was Tiffany. She was in The Lookout. Eric Berg was Dennis. And he was in The Haunting of Connecticut. Tom Nico was the mayor. And he was in Goon and Cult of Chucky.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mike O'Brien was Steen Carson. He was one of the misdirected Santas. And of course, Trish, where's he from?
He's Wes Humboldt on Corner Gas.
That's right. I knew you'd spot that right away.
Yes. I didn't recognize it with his shaved head.
I didn't either. I was like, this guy looks so familiar. So I went and dug and I'm like, ah, there he is. It's funny, but if you look at a lot of the credits in this movie, a bunch of people are like from Winnipeg or died in Winnipeg. Well, it's a very Winnipeg-heavy movie.
Well, it was shot outside, just outside in Selkirk, right? So, it's got a very large Canadian supporting cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curtis Moore was the Reverend Madeley, and he was in episode 87, Mother's Day. And he was a creepy, gross reverend. Yeah.
The most unnecessarily creepy reverend.
Yeah.
He's also the creepiest character in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, if you're going to make him creepy, make him one of the suspects.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this movie really does have a bad habit of, like, I don't know what they were going for, where any character who gets a pretty brutal kill, like, they really, really try to make them as dislikable as possible. Mm-hmm. And like Sam was saying, other than the one woman who is, like, a model, and, I mean, you're wondering what they're trying to say there, but, yeah, it's a weird habit. Because I feel like it doesn't make you afraid of the Santa. It's like he's a vigilante, but at the same time, he's doing these really brutal murders and terrible things that are not justifiable. So you kind of, it's like muddied.
It's very muddied. Honestly, I put it simply, it's bad writing. I mean, if following the formula of the Santa killing the sinner, the naughty person that's on the naughty list, but they go out of their way to make them unrepentant. Yeah. They're not characters. they're just assholes, and they're written to die. It's the entire movie goes like that. Every character that's is supposed to die and has a sin, they don't take any time to tell you. They just make you hate them right away, and that makes this whole movie so hard to watch. Yeah.
They do have this whole thing which goes fucking nowhere, is the little gifts that are all wrapped the same. Mm-hmm. Given to like kind of all of the victims. And then you never establish like, how would he know? I mean, unless like the dad, he knew that name from who killed his dad. But other than that.
Yeah. They
don't know him for fucking Adam.
I mean, yeah, she figures out that they're markers, that these are the cues of who the victims are going to be. But how do you know that ahead of time? Like, if you've given us a scene where we'd seen this guy before he became Santa Claus, instead of that opening scene where he's in the shadow, got that dude tied up in the basement with Christmas lights, making his costume.
Or if you're going to introduce the idea where he's marking all of his victims with these gifts, like, why not establish a whole thing where, like, he moves to a new town, lives there for a year, and catalogs all the sins, and then does it?
Yeah.
Great device, but poorly executed, because there are a few moments there where she's starting to make the connection early on in the film, and then it just disappears for a while, and then all of a sudden she makes the connection near the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, this movie doesn't know if it's, like, a 2000s edgy slasher, a detective movie, or a vigilante movie, and it's somehow trying to be all three at once.
That's a really good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? When you're talking about it, at least in the first one, I had an understanding of Billy, why Billy did what he did, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get closure. This one, it's like the whole movie, they're trying to figure out who the killer Santa is. And what do we get at the ending? No, we just know it's this guy's kid. Doesn't really answer who the fuck this guy is.
Yeah, you don't do a whodunit if we don't actually see the person ahead of time.
Right?
Because I kept thinking, I'm like, oh, they're going to show them to us at some point. And like, okay, get a feel for all these characters. Nope. Not at all.
If you're going to go faceless psycho, go faceless psycho. Don't make it a whodunit. Or if you make it a whodunit, make it a fucking whodunit.
Yeah.
Pick a lane.
Just to round out the cast here, Adriana O'Neill was the mother. She was in Home Alone, The Holiday Heist. John B. Lowe was the dad. He was in Butterfly Effect. Ali Tataryn was Alana Roach. She was also in Curse and Cult of Chucky. Brendan Fair was Deputy Jordan, and he's in this for a cup of coffee, but most famous for Final Destination and the Roswell TV series, and it's a shame he had to sully those credits with this piece of trash. Aaron Hughes was Frank. He was in You Kill Me. Kelly Wolfman was Goldie Wallace, who made a career of doing Christmas movies, apparently, because she was in Lucky Christmas and The Christmas Heart. And Courtney Palm was Maria. She was, I do believe, the model that gets thrown in the wood chipper. She was in wonderful movies like Zombievers and Hooker Assassin.
Actually, Zombievers is amazing. And if you haven't watched it, you owe yourself one of the better horror comedies of the past decade.
There's bits of it that are a bit mean and weird and a bit sexist, but it's not overall horribly bad.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
When they lean into the comedy, it's good.
Yeah.
Like, as long as they lean into the comedy, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just to have a little tangent for Zombievers, there's like the Zombievers bite things and then the things turn into, as part of the zombie virus,
yeah,
like hybrid beaver zombies. So there's like such crazy comedy body horror in that movie. Oh my goodness.
It's a wonderful idea. Like, you get hit by a Zombiever and you turn into like a beaver. Like, I'm just looking at, I don't know. I don't think it took place in Canada, but it should have.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, this movie does steal a little bit from the original film, and it should have stolen a lot more, to be honest. It might have been better. Mm-hmm. But the antler kill is in here. What else was
it? The creepy grandfather is.
The creepy grandfather with the...
Oh, with a demon voice?
Yeah.
Yes.
What was that? Like...
But it's not some... He's not scaring some kid. He's, like, scaring this... older guy,
20-year-old
who's taking money from his wallet. So I'm all right, you're gonna die too, kid.
I feel like that was a scene where they like mixed up the lines for the script, because like he's talking to the grandfather and then the nurse comes in and he says, hey, this guy, he was just talking to me. And she was like, oh, that's strange, he's you know, hasn't said anything in a long time. And she's like, well, ready for your sponge bath? And he was like, he hasn't said anything in 10 years. And then he leaves. But he was like, well,
yes.
Well, don't forget, there's one of the other sort of identity crisis moments of this film is there's a moment of humor there where he's kind of slow to leave. And she says, do you want to help?
Yeah.
You know, I will say for the remake, there is some pretty cool cinematography at several points. I feel like I've seen movies with bigger budgets that look worse than this movie. Like the beginning when he's putting together his suit and stuff, like that was pretty well shot. And some of the red and green light fight near the fight at the end was kind of clever.
Well, and the kills were gratuitous, but they were really well done.
Yeah.
But thanks for bringing up the beginning of the movie where he's making the mask and stuff like that. So right at the beginning of the movie, there's a tell. You could see it right away that you knew it wasn't Donald Logue's Santa Claus, because the Santa, when he was putting on his mask, you could see he was clean shaven.
Yeah.
Right.
And also, for some reason, they really focus on him clipping his fingernails.
Yeah, just like, to be creepy.
Yeah.
It's like, creepy. Oh, this guy's unhinged.
He takes personal grooming seriously. Oh, no.
He's got a manicure. Of course he's a killer.
The fact that he was cutting a mask up and attaching a beard to it, I'm like, yeah, look good on film, but it just felt so contrived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's putting on the Santa suit, and they shoot it like it's a superhero putting on a costume.
Right? Yeah. See,
if they'd established that he was burned earlier, that would at least explain the mask.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of having him burned at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, now we're remaking.
This was a really terrible script, elevated by like semi-decent everything else.
Yeah, I mean, production-wise, it's actually pretty good. There is some good talent in here that unfortunately had nothing to work with. And the kills looked good. I mean, I got to give them that. The kills are all right, but it's not fun to watch at all. And you'd want it to be, if nothing else. But at least the original was fun in its 80-ness. Like, it's very 80s.
Very.
So you kind of have to forgive it for its lack of development. And, I mean, this movie is, almost 20 minutes longer. And it's got less in it.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, especially now with our increased awareness of things like childhood trauma and PTSD, I think that they could have made a really interesting horror film with a really great message and subtext. But instead, they threw it away. They threw away the best part of the original film.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, because like it might be a little bit pop psychology, but it is interesting. I was saying to Leah, there's a lot of bits in that movie where like true crime was kind of becoming more popular in the mid-80s. And there was an increased awareness of true crime and serial killers and all of this other stuff. But it was kind of tackling something that I feel like became really popular to tackle like in the 90s. And even the stuff with the Catholic school and the abuse, I don't really think that that was something that people were talking about in that era in terms of like the kids being beaten and like the mistreatment of the kids and all that stuff. Like
it kind of was ahead of its time
a little bit.
Yeah, church was king at that time because they were helping save their souls from rock and roll and all this other, and video games and all this other stuff. It's like, yeah, sure, they were molesting children, but apparently that was fine. It wasn't really until the 90s, I think, that that stuff really started to come out.
Well, it started to come out, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in the original one, too, that I think, like, especially at the beginning, they cast a really, really good child actor to play young Billy. And like, he's very, he has a lot of good screen presence. His line delivery is really good. And the idea that very few people could say that they've been good all year round and they haven't done anything naughty. Yeah. And it really, really sets that up well, where he knows as a little kid that he hasn't been good all year. And so he's worried that any small bad thing could be deserving of punishment. And, you know, compared to the remake where everybody's just a shitty person, I think we touched on this a little earlier. The idea that no matter what, everybody has done something they're not proud of the year, and then there's somebody who's going off and then killing because of those small reasons is much better than the vigilante type angle they were going for in the remake.
And a child, that's a whole thing with them. Like, these are the rules that we've established. So that's what a child knows to be true. And that's the whole thing that they hang everything onto. And what I also didn't quite understand was when the mother superior had just was strong arming the poor kid onto Santa. I'm like, are you telling me in all the years this woman has been running an orphanage, she's never met a kid who's been scared of Santa? There's a lot of them. He's weird if you don't know who he is.
Or, and in particular in his case, because you knows who he is in his mind anyhow, he's the boogeyman.
Oh man, the movie does such a good job of setting up his trauma. Like, even when he's like watching the nun and that guy like have sex in the room through the keyhole, and then he sees like the nun beat them with the belt and everything. They just do such a good job of establishing his entire pathos.
So, you know, let's just take all of that and throw it in the garbage for the remake, because that's the most interesting aspect of that movie for being a really B-list slasher movie. There's actually a lot of depth there that you could have really made a great film out of this kind of mediocre one. And no, nobody was interested in doing that. They just wanted to do a very derivative slasher movie. And that's unfortunate. Yeah. It just does make me feel like maybe somebody will take a much better attempt at this down the road.
I hope so. It's a, out of all the Christmas horror movies that I've seen involving, like, I guess I should say, out of all the Christmas slashers that I've seen, I definitely think it's my favorite, the original one.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where if you're going to do a slasher around Christmas, for some reason, it just, because Christmas makes people crazy already, that it seems you have to really explore what made a person go crazy if they're going to kill on Christmas, you know? Like, it's just what puts them over the edge.
Why is this guy's crazy so much crazier than everybody else's?
One moment I loved in the original one is when he sees that little girl after murdering Linnea Quigley and her boyfriend. And then he's like asking her if she's been good all year round. And he's reaching into his pocket with the bloody box cutter. And like, that whole scene is so good. Like, it might be one of my favorite scenes in slasher movies of that era, just because there's a lot of really good tension. And
then he
gifts her the bloody box cutter. It's really good.
Like, and then he goes, are you really sure? Because that's another thing too, is I think if you were to ever, this is why I know throughout the many sequels, there's sort of different people that show up to be like the killer, but you could actually make this as like an anthology where it's like different people's trauma where they start doing this.
I was thinking that other than his brother, like, you could have had it spun off of that little girl too or something.
Yeah, you'd think about like the trauma of just all of that. Like, she just had all her entire family killed.
And that passing on trauma, it's a thing. It's an actual thing. So,
like, especially after Linnea Quigley told her that she was being naughty and Santa was going to get her if she was naughty, like, and then they're killed. Like, it's almost the same story happening again.
Absolutely.
It's like a Halloween 4 with a little girl, and then it ends where it's like she's the new Michael Myers, or they imply it. It's really similar.
But in both cases, it didn't really do anything with it.
Yeah. Mm.
Missed opportunities. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Oh, the remake is nothing but a missed opportunity. It's the definition of.
Yes. I will say it's not quite as bad as the Martyrs remake.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've seen worse remakes, which is saying something.
Yeah, but it is really close, because it, just like that Martyrs remake, it took all the stuff that was good about it, pushed it aside, and went with the sensationalism of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
That's
the easy way out.
They rate fairly close on IMDb, though. 5.9 for the original and 5.2 for the remake. I think that's being awfully kind to the remake.
Yes.
I think a lot of the original movie really doesn't get a lot of critical praise by anyone, but it's way better than you think it is going to be. And that's the way it is for every movie in that franchise. I was saying to Leah that the Silent Night, Deadly Night franchise might actually be one of my favorite horror franchises, just because all of them are better than they should be. And there is something that's actually pretty redeemable and memorable about all of them.
And I will say that if you've never seen the original film, the 2012 movie is not a bad horror. It's just a really bad remake. Mm-hmm. And it's not a good horror either.
Yeah,
but
no.
It has everything you want from a horror. It has gore and, well, not everything you want from a horror, but everything you want from a slasher. It has the gore. It has creative kills. It has a mysterious villain. It's just,
I just need slightly better dialogue. Look, a good slasher will have some okay dialogue. Like you,
yes.
I just want a slasher where somebody just fucking tries.
Yeah, no, I mean, it ticks the boxes. That's what it's doing. It's like, okay, we're making a formula slasher movie. And it's ticking all the boxes, but it forgot to actually make a plot that was engaging.
Yeah. And the plot tacking it on at the end was good.
It's probably the weakest of all of the Silent Night, Deadly Night movies. But I actually kind of say that, other than the second one, which is like really bad, it goes full circle to where it's enjoyable. I'd say that like the best one is the first one, then probably the third one, then I think 5, then 4, then 2, then this remake. Would be my ordering in terms of quality.
Well, it's a strange franchise because, you know, the first two movies, they're casting pretty much unknown actors. And mm-hmm. then you start getting into some names and better quality. So it is a weird anomaly of the franchise getting better as it gets older.
Yeah, it's very strange. Like number 3, especially, like I mentioned, Bill Moseley's in it, but aside from Bill Moseley, it has like 4 actors from Twin Peaks, like the same year that they were in season 1 of Twin Peaks. And it's really, really kind of crazy to watch it for that reason as well. Because I believe Ray Wise is in it. The guy who plays Leo is in it. And yeah, it's like all of them have really good casts. If the direct-to-video ones all have really good casts somehow.
Well, Ray Wise would do anything, so...
But he's always fun. He's another one of those... Fun. Yeah, you put him in a movie and he's like... This bright shining star that you can just enjoy when he's in your orbit for a very brief time.
Yeah, he is definitely one of those actors who's made a career out of being the shining moments and bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Well, any last thoughts about Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Silent Night?
Yeah, if you haven't seen the original, do. Mm-hmm. If you have seen the sequel, but not the original, go watch the original. If you haven't seen the remake, don't bother.
Wow, yeah. That's some complicated math there.
Yeah.
I would say that the first one, it was really, really cool seeing him work in that toy store and then seeing all of the shelves lined with all of these really crazy 1980s toys and play sets.
Oh, that was cool because like the one that stood out to me was the Star Wars Jabba set, and I had that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jealous. Val watched the first little bit of this movie with me, and one thing she noticed was like she went, "It's Christmas. Why the hell do they still have Halloween decorations out?" Because they were all back at the store there. So, yeah, there are these odd little details. I mean, it sounds like it may have even been a real toy store that they were using.
I would imagine
that was ugly toy store. It looked like a warehouse, but I've been into stores like that in the U.S. Like when I used to travel into Spokane and go to the White Elephant there, which was a sporting goods store, and then they'd have another room which was all toys, and it kind of looked like that.
Mm-hmm. You have like those places where it's supposed to be. It's kind of like they've bought overstock, and it's just like kind of clearance, and it's a hodgepodge of whatever they can get their hands on.
Yeah, it certainly didn't look like there was much rhyme or reason to their racking.
Yeah, like there was like they had Crawl the Board Game. They had like
oh, I wanted it as soon as I saw it. I'm like, yeah. I didn't know that existed. I want one.
Yeah, me neither. They have like this monster makeup kit. Like the all of the shelves are just lined with these primo vintage cool toys.
Yes.
But actually, well, that's another established thing. We were talking about how maybe they probably didn't have permission to have those toys on those shelves because they definitely apparently couldn't get any real Christmas music for the first movie, like Christmas Fever. And then that Santa's Coming to Get You song that's like on every radio and carolers are singing it. Like those songs do not exist.
Well, they do now. The movie.
Santa's Coming to Get You.
Yeah, they definitely.
Like that song is like purposefully written to be sinister.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably right. They probably didn't get any visual clearances for those toys. Maybe they settled it down the road, but damn. I that was the first thing I thought. I'm like, oh, that's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah. For me, it was wild watching, at least in the opening part, where it's the family in the car. And it's like, mom is in the front. Nobody's wearing seatbelts. She's just got the baby on her lap. And I'm like, yeah, I've been in that car.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. You're right.
Very nostalgic.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a portrait of the 80s. Well, I think that closes up Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Silent Night. Didn't want to do a horror movie this quick after we did so many of them, but we're kind of running out of Christmas movies that have been remade. So I don't know what we're going to give you next year, but it's going to be a while. Next year's just around the corner.
I just had one more thought. I always wonder why they were so upset that like Santa was like portrayed at this incredible stalking danger. And they're like, oh, you can't portray Santa like that. I mean, one of the most famous songs is like, you better watch out is how it starts. I mean, there's a lot of creepy songs about Santa.
You know, really, Jay mentioned it earlier. You should look up the Siskel and Ebert quote unquote review of this movie. They are very vicious. They're like, shame on you. You thought you could make this movie and then buy a Lamborghini. You know, you have nothing to be proud of. Try explaining to your kids when this trailer is on TV. This is just a movie. Shame on you. This is awful. And I think everybody was just mad because there was TV commercials where there was Santa holding an axe. And they were like, kids are going to see that and freak out.
Well, I don't know. I'd rather see Santa as a bloodthirsty killer than some imaginary guy who doesn't give a shit about me to give me any presents. You know?
Well, I mean, it made for a good poster with Santa Claus going down the chimney with that axe. So,
oh, yeah.
That's was quite the image.
It is an iconic poster.
Yeah, despite its controversy, I think it's maybe has been reassessed as a bit of a horror classic.
Mm-hmm.
I would say so.
Yeah, that group that started that controversy, by the way, they were so successful they thought they could take out their challenges. Nope, they failed miserably the next time and that was it. So they got their one win.
Yeah, well, I just don't understand why that was the hill they wanted to die on. It's like, you know, you'd rather just take on a whole movie about like this belief in this imaginary person. Grow a set, tell your kids the truth, and just move on.
For sure. Well, we wish you a very creepy Christmas.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I want to wish you all a Merry Christmas, but after this movie, I mean, let's face it, 2020's been kind of a shit show. So do the best you can. I know if you're smart, you're not seeing your families this year, protecting each other and doing it over Zoom and whatnot. And we certainly want to thank everybody for joining us throughout this weird ass year. And this was another weird one to end the season on.
But also, if you think about it, because it's all quarantine this year, if there is a slasher Santa with an axe, it's going to look so out of the ordinary. They're going to catch him well before he kills as many people as he does in these movies.
There is that. He's going to have trouble getting into the parties.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a safer Christmas. Just saying.
Yes. If you like what we do, follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to send us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments. And of course, your fan challenges. I've got a couple more emails, so we're starting to get a list for next year. We'll start rolling them out maybe in January. We'll try to do something cool and start picking away at these fan challenges. If you want to make the fan challenge, it should be something interesting. You've been listening to the show for a while, so you kind of know what we like. Make sure it's not after the year 2000. Not even going to acknowledge it if it is. Make sure it's accessible. So tell us where to find it if you know where to find it. Granted, we're in Canada, so if you tell us it's on Hulu, that doesn't help us, but at least you tried.
Yeah.
We'll find a way. We'll try to find the movie. We'll either find it on Amazon or Netflix or some pay-per-view, whatever. We'll find it. We'll, you know, there's lots of ways to find movies now. So we'll definitely find it if it's something we're interested in remaking. So don't you worry. And if it's been a while since you made a request, just be patient. We'll get to it eventually. And I'll even try to email you to let you know when the episode is going to air. So, but thank you for all your letters. Thank you for your support this year through a weird year. And it's nice to see growth in our numbers, even in a year where nobody's really commuting to work because they're working at home. Mm. So thanks for following us. Hopefully we helped you get through this pandemic, and you certainly helped us get through ours.
Yes.
Yay.
And hey, if you want to...
Yes, it's like we're in your house.
And if you want to help support the show, go to our Wix site. Sam, what's the Wix site?
invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And you can find lots of different ways to listen to the episodes there. And there is a link to our store. There's lots of cool stuff at our storefront. You can find all of our product and other products we really dig and think you will too. So you can get the I Was That Person That Was In That Thing That One Time shirt. You can get the skull masks. You can get the classic movie posters that Sam and Jeff Omega have been making up. Lots of cool stuff there. Go check it out. Lots of cool stuff to wear on your back or put on a mask. Maybe you drink out of a mug or a phone case. Lots of cool stuff.
Or write in a notebook.
Yeah. The alligator peeper looks freaking awesome on a mask, by the way. I saw what
nice
how it looks when Jay posted it, and it's like, yeah, that's stellar. Your color choices were perfect.
Thank you. I may have to order that one next. But I just got my Reefer Madness t-shirt, and it looks amazing. So, yeah, great products from TeePublic, and just hit up our storefront and have a browse. You might find something you like.
Yeah, if there's some holiday coming up that you need to gift people stuff, you know.
Yeah, might be too late for Christmas, but birthdays and all sorts of stuff.
A belated Christmas. You know how January is kind of blah, and you're like, "What am I doing with my life? How do I move on? Yeah. My New Year's resolutions haven't taken off. I don't know what I'm doing." Yeah. Just buy yourself something there and have it there for January, so you have something to look forward to. It's good.
And because this is getting to be pretty close to Christmas when this episode drops, there's very, very likely going to be a site-wide Boxing Day sale on TeePublic that has everything. So definitely check it out if you've been hesitant.
And hey, the next big one is Valentine's Day. So I'm sure that the House on Haunted Hill or Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny are going to make really terrible gifts that will make her laugh.
Yeah. Horror movies are for lovers. I mean, really. And she probably will enjoy it.
Or he.
Yeah. She or he. You got a horror gal or guy. They're pretty good.
Yes. All right. Well, that's it. I might have something really short for you next week for the between Christmas and New Year's break. And then after that, we will have our part three of Cult Movie Trailer Go-Go.
Yay!
Yeah. Cult Movie Trailer Go-Go. 3D. So good. And after that, we'll be back to our regular scheduled episodes. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you next year. Until then, I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I am Jeff Omega. And remember, you see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
And we are out of here.
Cast your mind back. Christmas 08. Remember where you were?
Probably some herpes-ridden crotch of a town like this, I suspect.
Deputy?
Metesca, Montana.
Does that ring a bell in that dumb skull of yours yet?
My mind is blissfully bereft of the effects of campanology.
Now, well, four people were murdered there Christmas Eve. Cops never found the killer.
Judicial ineptness is a universal curse. I fucking weep.
Yeah, well, six people died here tonight. I ask you, what are the chances?
I'd say the odds of that are pretty high.
Because it's that time of the year, Sheriff! Yeah! Christmas! When people go off the deep end. Yeah, you know why. Because they spend too much, and they drink too much, and they eat too much, and they think too much. And they look around at all that fake fun and happy laughter, and they go, where the fuck is my cup of joy, huh? Where's my figgy pudding? Where's my stocking full of gifts? Where's my Calvin Klein underwear, my cable TV, my replica Tim Tebow NFL jersey? Where's my fancy cologne? Where's my gift-wrapped Norman Rockwell wife? Huh? And my beautiful, happy, smiling children? Where? Nowhere. Where are my friends? My beaming friends who worship the fucking ground I walk on because I've had an awesome fucking year, man. And it doesn't take much to put people over the edge, uh-uh. Mm-mm, just a dirty look. Or a bad word. Yeah? Or a TV too loud. Or some asshole behind you leaning on his horn. Ring, ring, it's a telemarketer. Give me money for Haiti. Or the Democrats or National Suck My Dick Week. It's the most wonderful fucking time of the year. But whatever it is that you guys think I did, I most certainly did not.